tentu yang retreat chanting book. Turn to page 5, morning chanting. Okay. Thing B is not in yet, huh? Okay, never mind, we do it on our own, huh? Page 5. Dedication of offering, morning chanting. To the Blessed One, the Lord, who fully attained perfect enlightenment, to the teaching which He expounded so well, and to the Blessed One's disciple who have practiced well, to these, the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, we render with offerings our rightful homage. It is well for us that the Blessed One, having attained liberation, still have compassion for later generation. May these simple offerings be accepted for our long-lasting benefit and for the happiness it gives us. The Lord, the perfectly enlightened and blessed one, I render homage to the Buddha, the blessed one. Bow. The teaching so completely explained by him, I bow to the Dhamma. Okay. Then the third one. The Blessed One's disciple who have practiced well, I bow to the Sangha. Okay, Ingbi is back. We let Ingbi take over. Ingbi, you continue. Don't worry, you go continue the next page. Now let us pay preliminary homage to the Buddha.
Homage to him, the Blessed One, the worthy one, the fully enlightened one. Homage to him, the blessed one, the worthy one, the fully enlightened one. Homage to him, the blessed one, the worthy one, the fully enlightened one.
Now let us chant in praise of the Buddha.
The Tathagata is the pure one, the perfectly enlightened one. He is impeccable in conduct and understanding, the accomplished one, the knower of the world. He trains perfectly those who wish to be trained. He is teacher of gods and men, human. He is awakened and holy. In this world with its gods, demons and kind spirits, its seekers and sages, celestial and human beings, he has by deep insight revealed the truth. He has pointed out the Dhamma, beautiful in the beginning, beautiful in the middle, beautiful in the end. He has explained the spiritual life of complete purity in its essence and conventions. I chant my praise to the Blessed One. I bow my head to the Blessed One.
Now let us chant in praise of the Dhamma.
Well expounded is the Dhamma of the Blessed One. Can be realized in the here and the now. Beyond time, beyond thought. Investigation. Leading inwards to the heart, Nibbana. can be understood by the wise each for themselves. I chant my praise to this teaching. I bow my head to this truth.
Now let us chant in praise of the Sangha.
They are the blessed ones, disciples, who have good conduct, who have upright conduct, who have wise conduct, who have dutiful conduct. That is the four paths, the eight kinds of noble beings. These are the blessed ones, disciples. Such ones are worthy of gifts, worthy of hospitality, worthy of offerings, worthy of respect. They give occasion for incomparable goodness to arise in the world. I chant my praise to this Sangha. I bow my head to this Sangha.
Now let us chant our salutation to the Triple Gem and a passage of encouragement.
The Buddha, absolutely pure with ocean-like compassion, possessing this clear sight of wisdom, destroyer of worldly self-corruption, devotedly indeed that Buddha I revere. The teaching of the Lord, like a lamp, illuminating the path and its fruit, the deathless, that which is beyond the conditioned world. Devotedly indeed, that Dhamma I revere. The Sangha, the most fertile ground for cultivation. Those who have realized peace, awaken after the accomplished one, noble and wise, all longing abandoned, devotedly indeed, that Sangha I revere.
This salutation should be made to that which is worthy.
Through the power of such good action, may all obstacles disappear. One who knows things as they are has come into this world, and he is an Arahant, a perfectly awakened being, purifying the way leading out of delusion, coming and directing to perfect peace, and leading to enlightenment. This way he has made known. Having heard the teaching, we know this. Birth is suffering, aging is suffering, sickness and disease is suffering, and death is suffering. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are suffering. Association with the dislike is suffering. Separation from one's loved ones and our prized possession is suffering. Not attaining one's wishes is suffering. In brief, the five aggregates of grasping are suffering. These are as follows. Identification with the body, identification with the feeling, identification with perception, identification with mental formations, identification with consciousness. For the complete understanding of this, the Blessed One in his lifetime frequently instructed his disciple in just this way. In addition, he further instructed, the body is impermanent, feeling is impermanent, Perception is impermanent. Mental formations are impermanent. Consciousness is impermanent. The body is non-self. Feeling is non-self. Perception is non-self. Mental formations are non-self. Consciousness is non-self. All conditioned phenomena are impermanent. There is no self in the conditioned and in the unconditioned. All of us are bound by birth, aging, sickness and death. By sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief and despair. Bound by suffering and obstructed by suffering. Let us all aspire to complete freedom from suffering. The blessed one who long ago attained parinibbana is our refuge. So too are the Dhamma and the Sangha. Attentively we follow the pathway of that blessed one. With all of our mindfulness and strength, may then the cultivation of this practice lead us to the end of every kind of suffering.
Before we end the salutation, we go back to page 11, we chant the Pali. Rupang anicchang, Vedana anicca, Sanya anicca, Sankhara anicca, Vijnanam anicca, Rupang anatta, Vedana anatta, Sanya anatta, Sankhara anatta, Vijnana anatta, Sabbe sankhara anicca, Sabbe dhamma anatta te. Okay. Now you will chant the closing homage. Arahang Samma Sambuddho Bhagava Buddhang Bhagavantang Abhivademi. Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammang Namassami. Supatipanno Bhagavato Savakasangho Sanghang Namami. Okay. Okay, we still got 10 minutes. So I can do some reflection also. We supposed to have morning chanting and reflection. So we will do the Anatta Lakkhana Sutta reflection. You turn to page 42. Okay, page 42. Yes, retreat version. Anatta Lakkhana Sutta. Yes, very good. So the English translation is on the page 43. This discourse is very important. The discourse on the characteristic of anatta, which Many people within the Theravada tradition define it as non-self. But you have to bear in mind, anatta is much more than non-self. Non-self is just a small aspect of anatta. The more deeper meaning is the empty nature of all phenomena and existence. That's why this characteristic of anatta is very profound. It is similar to the Mahayana sunyata. The reason why they use the word non-self is because it relates to the human physical body, the first aspect of the five aggregate of form and mind. So when the Buddha say all conditioned phenomena is impermanent, the reason why it's impermanent is because it is dependent originating or condition arising within our conditioned world. Without condition, nothing arises. Just like what he told the monk. Whatever that arises, there are causes and conditions behind. And from this, you will understand. Without condition, nothing arises. Well, this is a conditioned world. And because it's dependent on condition, it is never permanent. It will definitely be in a state of flux. It will change. And because of this changeability, impermanent characteristic or universal characteristic, you will come to understand that they are not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can call, this is me, this is I. Therefore, this entity can own things. This can all be mine. There is no such thing. And this sutta explains all this. And because of that, when you recall just now when we chant, when the Buddha say rūpaṃ anicchaṃ, then after the rest of the aggregate of form and mind, he repeat rūpaṃ anattā. So if form is also anattā, it has deep meaning. The first aspect of form is as a human being, that's why it's non-self. But the second aspect of form are all the external form, the mental form that you take in from outside. Like this table, the Buddha said, it is also anatta. This one got no life. How can you say this table is non-self? Do you understand? This table arrives, like I explained on the first and second day, is because the condition is there for it to arise. Because of condition, it exists. Condition ceases to be, it ceases to be. So this table is impermanent, not a permanent unchanging entity. That's why he said this table is also not real. In the sense, it is dependent originating. It exists because the supporting condition is there. Any other supporting condition gone, is gone. So that is the meaning of anatta. So this table is also anatta because it is condition arising, dependent origin, not a permanent unchanging entity. Then like I explained, every moment, every instant, the whatever electron, all those minor forces that you cannot see, they are in the state of flux, vibrating. And it is not what you think, solid, not moving. No. A lot of energy movement, vibration. These are trapped energy. It cannot be released out. But as you know, like our physical body, vibrating all the time, having life, keep on evolving, evolving. That's why it will decay. Like this table, it will also decay. Then finally, condition ceases to be, it ceases to be. That's why it's anatta, empty, not real. Okay, now we go into this sutta so that you can understand better. The first part is just the solo introduction to explain to you what this is. All beings should take pain to understand the characteristics of anatta, non-self, or empty nature existence, which provide matchless deliverance from the self-belief and self-perception. This is to break free from Sakkaya Ditthi. That is for the first aspect of the human form. As taught by the Supreme Buddha, This teaching is given so that those who meditate on experiential realities will arrive at perfect comprehension. It is for the development of perfect understanding of this phenomena and for the investigation of all defiled mind moments. The consequence of this cultivation is total deliverance, so desirous of bringing this teaching forth with its great benefit. Let us now recite this sutta. So the actual sutta starts from here. I have to explain a little bit. When the Buddha became enlightened, after the 7 weeks after his enlightenment, he was reluctant to teach. Then one of the Brahma up there, Brahma Sahampati, can read the mind of the Buddha. Then he came down, pay respect, then in a very, very tactful way, respectful way, requested the Buddha to come out to share his understanding and his teaching, because he said there are some with little dust in the eye that can understand his teaching. Then the Buddha reflected. Then the two teachers that taught him, Alara and Udaka, if they are around, he can actually share with them the teaching and they can also become enlightened. But when he checked, both already passed away. Then the next one he recalls the 5 ascetics that were with him during the early days. Then he saw them quite far away. So he decided to go and help them or share his understanding with them. So that's how the sutta come about. So after he met them, finally able to convince them, because this 5 thought he is no longer serious. Because the Buddha, after he went through the self-mortification, he realized there is no result. So he referred back to partake all the food that is offered. So they thought they had given up the self-mortification, the striving. So they left him. But later on, when the Buddha returned and told them that he already realized, at first they don't believe. But the Buddha was able to convince them with the understanding. And because of that, they start listening. So he started off with the first sermon called Dhamma Chakrapavattana Sutta, the turning of the wheel, the tree turning and all those things. So after he delivered that sermon, Kondanya became a sotapan. Then after that, the Buddha knew the rest are ready. He delivered this sutta, Anatta Lakkhana Sutta, the sutta on non-self and empty nature of existence. All 5 become arahant. See, that is the potency of this sutta. So this sutta, you really have to listen. You can understand. You may also awaken. Now you are going to it. Thus have I heard, at one time, the Blessed One was dwelling near Benares at Isipatana, the deer park. So the first sermon was delivered at this place, Isipatana, deer park. There he addressed the group of 5 bhikkhus, the ascetic that was with him. He said, rupa or form, here he was referring to the physical body. Bhikkhu is non-self. Why? The Buddha explained. If bhikkhu, form, or rupa were self, then form would not lead to affliction. You agree or not? If it's self, you can control it. I want the body to be such, it will not go the other way. But because it's not you, not a permanent, unchanging entity that you can control, where you can call this is me, this is I, self. That's why the Buddha explained it to the bhikkhu. He said, if form, if bhikkhu, form were self, then form would not lead to affliction. And one might be able to say, in regards to form, let my form be thus. Let my form not be thus. But since bhikkhu, form is non-self or empty, form goes the way of nature. Form therefore leads to affliction, because it will decay, it will get sick, it will die, it will lead to affliction. That's why it's impermanent, not a permanent unchanging entity. But since bhikkhu, form is non-self or anatta, empty, form therefore leads to affliction. And one is not able to say in regards to form, let my form be thus, let my form not be thus. It's anatta, empty. Go the way of nature, not within your command. That's why it cannot be you. So he repeats for feeling, perception, mental formation, or sankhara and vijnana. Then after that, the Buddha continued. He said, what do you think, bhikkhu? Is form, your physical body, an external form, permanent? I ask you the same question. Is form permanent? Definitely not. It goes the way of nature. It will get old, it will decay, it will get sick and die. So that's why the monk replied, impermanent, Lord. Then the Buddha asked this very, very important question. Now I ask you. That which is impermanent, is it painful or pleasurable? Definitely painful. When you grow old, get sick and die, you think it's very fun. So it's painful. Painful, Lord, they reply. Then this one is very good. That which is impermanent, painful, and of the nature to change, is it fit or is it right to consider that this is mine? I am this. This is self. Definitely not, isn't it? Because that fellow can change and can decay and die. If it's you, you die. Understand? That's why he said, don't be foolish. So this one is the way the Buddha actually make them wake up. Then he continued with feeling. What do you think, bhikkhu? He said, is feeling permanent or impermanent? As you know, feeling arise and pass away, come and go, keep on changing. Sometimes pleasant, sometimes unpleasant, isn't it? So feeling is what? Impermanent, Lord. So that which is impermanent, is it painful or pleasurable? Definitely painful, isn't it? Because when you sit in a meditation, when the feeling arises, then you realize that that part where the chi is not moving is giving you pain, unpleasant feeling. So because feeling is impermanent, it will bring about unpleasant feeling, painful feeling, emotional negativity and all those things. So that's the reason why they answer painful, Lord. Then the Buddha say, that which is impermanent, painful, and of the nature to change, is it right to consider that this is mine, I am this, and this is self, myself or self? So definitely, it is not. So you come to understand. So that which is impermanent tends towards suffering. How can you say this is me, this is I, and this is myself? So anatta lakkhana is very clear. Then the Buddha repeat for the other aggregate of mind, perception, mental formation, and consciousness. Then we turn to the next page. Therefore, bhikkhu, he said, second paragraph, whatever form there is, whether past, future, or present, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, whether it is far or near, all form should, means the physical human form, first aspect, and all external form, you should consider it this way, he said, by means of right understanding or right wisdom, be seen as it really is. Thus, this is not me. I am not this. This is not self. And a better way to put it is, these are not real, empty, because they are conditioned arising, causal phenomena, goes the way of nature, follow nature's law. And because of that, he repeats for feeling, perception, and mental formation, and consciousness. Then the second last paragraph is very important, you listen. Seeing in this way with wisdom, bhikkhu, the wise noble disciple becomes, here they use the wrong word, disenchanted with form. No, they have the wisdom not to get themselves entangled. So this word, the English word, is not a good translation. Anyway, we just read the word. Disenchanted with form, but there is no aversion, understand or not? No dislike, nothing. Means you are not deluded by it anymore. You know form go this way, but you do not dislike it, understand or not? You can accept it for what it is, and you can use it, but you are not deceived by it. It's just like the fifth patriarch Tohe Ning. This mind, the mundane mind, you have to learn to use it and yet not deceived by it or deluded by it. So this one is very useful. The noble, wise disciple becomes disenchanted with form. It means the meaning is what I explained, not this English word. Becomes disenchanted with feeling. Then he repeats for perception, mental formation, and consciousness. Means you understand what they are. They are of the nature to deceive you, delude you, and cause you to cling, grasp, and condition all your affliction and mental suffering. Then after that, he say, becoming disenchanted, their passion fade away. Passion here is their clinging, their grasping. It should be becoming wise when they understand all this. Then their craving, their passion, their delusion fade away. With the fading away of their delusion or passion and craving, the heart is liberated. With liberation, there comes not knowledge, there comes understanding. It is liberated, and they know. Destroy is birth, just like Angulimala, he mentioned. The holy life has been lived. Done is what had to be done. There is no more becoming or coming back into any state of being. That's why you can liberate from birth and death. Thus spoke the Blessed One. Delighted, the group of five bhikkhu rejoiced in what the Buddha had said. Then, while this discourse had been delivered, the mind of the five bhikkhus were free from defilement or tin through clinging no more. Then here he say, thus end the discourse on anatta lakkhana. But in the other book, it's mentioned they all become arahant. Okay, so with this, we can continue with our Heart Sutta. Turn to page. Yesterday was 37. Okay. Second paragraph. Or third paragraph. We finished second paragraph.